Hello and welcome to another episode of Gardening for Nature. This time I'm going to talk about the all-attractive herb garden. I'm going to talk about how it can encourage nature and how it can make your food taste much, much better. But first of all, we're going to carry on from last week where we were talking about water features. This time it's going to be the pond, and without further ado, let's go to Justin's garden and have a look what he's done with his wildlife garden and pond. Well, I've been asked by my friend Justin to come and look at his wildlife pond, and I've just got to start recording at the top end of his wildlife garden. He's got an area by a field here. He's had a new wall put up and they've cleared some stuff. He's just left it to nature. It's more or less south facing, and on the outside he's used as a sort of hedge. Stinging nettles, as simple as that. He's got a load of brash that they're growing through. Well, they look contained and relatively neat. We know that they're disappearing fast because people want to get rid of them because they get stung. And the fact that he's got this all the way down the length of his garden, it really works well coming through the brash. And then you walk down a bit further and he's got a pile of logs. And it's up to my waist. And a good pile, they're rotting down, and I can see leaves that have got caught in there. I can see a few weeds growing through. I can see a few stinging nettles growing through them as well. It's right on the side of the path. Then he's got a wood chip path. And this wood chip was from a farmer next door, had done some chopping down of some hedges and left wood chip lying around. So he's used that as a path. And then there's some more logs. And then there's a wire fence, because dogs run around here, but the wire fence has got holes in so the hedgehogs can get underneath it. And then at the other side of the wire fence, it's Justin. You're right.
Hello.
And he stood by his pond. Well, blimey, this is really, really good. All this is just left to nature. Doesn't look unkept.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So we've got the little walkway here that we want to make sure we can got somewhere to access the area to sort of keep not too maintained. We can let the wildlife do its bit and let the flowers grow back and the other greenery around here.
Yeah.
So we can really encourage other wildlife, hopefully, to come into the area. Yeah. And the pond, of course.
And what's the best thing is, apart from just this little bit maintained here, you've left everything.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. And you can come and sit here in the evening and listen to what's going on. You can hear the, you know, animals moving around in the field there. You've got long grass at the other side there, and great.
Yeah, it's really nice, actually. It is a lovely, because it's south facing, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
It's great in the summer's evening or this time of day. It's absolutely lovely when you just sit here tucked away and just looking at it all kind of starting to grow back as it is. You can see.
Yeah, great. Justin's garden was full of weeds and wild plants, yet it is still a lovely place to sit on a summer's evening. What more could you ask for from a garden? Anyway, back to the reason I visited Justin. Okay, so the wildlife garden, and at the end, you've got a pond. Can you tell us how you went about the pond?
Yeah, so, I mean, really, Liam, we knew we had a certain amount of space. So I did a little bit of research just to make sure I was doing it the right way in terms of size, depth, and also what to put down. So, yeah, essentially, dug down. Unfortunately, the ground was very tough underneath, a lot of rocks, and hit very, very solid ground. So we couldn't go as deep as I wanted to, but I managed to get a little bit of a depression in the middle. It gave a different level, and that's where the lilies, as you can see, were planted in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I laid a relatively thin layer of sand over the top, because, like I said, some rocks protruding,
right,
to hopefully not pierce the pond liner. Then laid down the pond liner with a little lip going all the way around the edge so we can tuck the pond liner in, and mm-hmm. then sort of scuff it back with the wood chippings, as you can see, a bit of earth and some stones around the edge to stop the wind from blowing it up. And then added a little beach, as you call it, with some stones we had lying around in the garden, but round stones, of course, without having jagged, sharp edges in there to rip the pond liner. So they were perfect, sort of river pebbles or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
And that adds a little bit of a beach, so any animals that do slip in or want to walk in to have a drink, like hedgehogs and so on, it was the perfect little spot to help them if they do get stuck or want to have a wander in. With a railway sweeper at the end as well, just to butt up the edge rather than using lots more earth than old railway sweeper I had. So that was perfect. And as you can see now, it's starting to grow back. It didn't look like this a few months ago, but now that the sun's come out and it's starting to get a bit warmer, it's really starting to take around the edge and looks a bit more natural than what it did previously.
Well, as Justin said there, do your research. He dug his pond at different depths and then he lined the base with some sand. This is so the sharp stones don't stick through the liner you might want to use. If you don't have sand, you could use old cardboard boxes bent into shape and wetted down. This will form the barrier between your liner and the stones. Various depths are really important too. This is for habitat and for your planting. And the pebbly beach on the end with the sloped sides, we all know that's so other things can get out if they fall in. As I've said previously, most if not all our visitors are amphibious. So the habitat around the edge of the pond is just as important as the habitat within.
You left the edge purposefully?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the intention was to let it regrow where we dug away. And I really wanted that to come back like it is, as you say, lots of stinging nettles and so on, which I know are good for certain wildlife. But that was the whole idea, to give it some shading as well, because it's south-facing. This gets the sun pretty much all day long. So not only have we noticed during the end of last summer that it dries out very quickly because it's got a black underside, of course. And it's just exposed to the sun pretty much all day. So I want the foliage to grow around the edge for the wildlife, but also for to give it some shading as well.
What I'm noticing here is that when you dug it as well, you did several depths, so you've given a lot of different depths. This will encourage different types of plants, or you can put different plants at different levels and create diversity. You've got different depths for different creatures to go into. You've got the beach, so anything that falls in that just come for a drink can get out. And then you've got the edge here all planted up, and this is left sort of wild. Anything that goes in the pond, most of them are amphibious, so when they go out, they've got somewhere to hide from predators. I'm really surprised. I'm not surprised, because you research stuff really well. I mean, it really is a good pond. Well, it's a big thank you from me to Justin for showing me around his wildlife garden and pond. And who'd have thought that sitting among stinging nettles on a summer's day can actually be an enjoyable thing? Well, that's ponds well and truly covered. So now I'm going to go on to the next subject, which is the herb garden. Herbs have been used since prehistoric times. They have been used in rituals to symbolise love, faith, remembrance and devotion. They've been used in medicines, many being brought over by the Roman field medics, the Capsarii. They treated the wounded on the field of battle. Herbs like echinacea, valerian, ginkgo, chamomile, sage and rosemary are all still used today. There are many uses for herbs, and planting them in your garden will save you money, give you an ornamental display, give you something to perfume the house and help make food more tasty. Wildlife loves them too. Herbs are generally easy to grow. Give them some sun, free draining soil, and you're away. A large garden's not required, they will adapt to any size. You can plant them in a border, on a wall, in a window box, pot or tub. They're easy to propagate, grow and enjoy. What's there to lose? Now, if you haven't got much room in your garden, you can try putting your herbs in a pot. And I've got some terracotta pots here. It's about 6 inch across. I don't know what that is in centimetres, but it's a 6 inch across pot. And I'm going to put some chives in here. So I've got the pot and I'm going to put some broken up bits of terracotta pot in the bottom for drainage. You could use gravel if you want. Some people don't bother. I always do this. I feel it just helps it drain freely. And that's very important when you're planting herbs. And then I'm going to put my compost in. This is a peat-free compost, so it's very, very free draining. Really good stuff. And I'm going to put the compost in halfway up the pot. And then I'm going to take the chives out of my little plastic pot, which is a little 9 centimeter pot. I don't know what that is in inches. So we're going both metric and imperial here. And I'm going to then plant the chives and put the soil around the chive roots into the pot. Then I'm going to make sure there's a little lip around the edge of the pot, about an inch, so that when I water, it doesn't flow straight off. So the compost isn't going right to the top of the pot. And the depth of the chives is just a little bit deeper than they were in the original 9 centimeter pot. And then I'm going to give it the all important gardener's tap. That just steadies and levels the compost. And then I'm going to put it somewhere where it can grow away nicely, give it a nice water, keep that compost moist but not too wet. And I'm going to put some little feet underneath so that it can drain through freely.
as sometimes when you put a pot on a flat surface, it'll cover up that hole at the bottom and the water can't flow out. That'll help it there as well. But that's simple. I'm going to do two. I'm going to leave one lot of chives flower for the pollinators and the other pot I'm going to harvest from for my food. Job done.
Rosemary, thyme, sage and many more will grow easily in pots. They even grow well in window boxes and smell gorgeous when you open the window on a sunny day. Have a go. It's simple. Herbs are good. I have them growing in the garden, in pots, and some rosemary trailing over my wall. The pots are often being picked from during the summer when I have barbecues or guests round. The extra flavour they provide covers up my horrendous cooking. The only drawback I can think of with herbs is that generally they are short-lived. But there's even an answer to that. Take plenty of cuttings. They strike easily. Anyone can do it. If you go back to the episode Gardening on the Cheap, there's some cutting advice on there. There are too many herbs to mention on just one podcast, so here are just a few of my go-to plants for use by us and by nature. Borage. It's easy to grow and you sow it from seed as it's an annual plant. The flowers are a good nectar source for bees and attractive to look at. The blooms can also be used to make your meals look more attractive. I've even seen them frozen in ice cubes. Cool. Lavender, used for its scent. Quite often used in potpourri. There are many varieties and all attract pollinators and look good. I tend to grow them from softwood cuttings in the early summer. Angelica, good early flowers for pollinators. A particular favourite of hoverflies. Sage, easy to strike from cuttings and grows well in pots. There are many varieties, some with very decorative foliage. If left to flower, they're rich in nectar for those pollinators. Nettles, perhaps something you might not want in your garden, but for centuries has been of use to man. I've even been told that the Romans used to roll in them to keep warm, something I don't recommend. We've been too keen over the years to eradicate this plant from our gardens and hedgerows. But if we leave it grow, it can support up to 40 different species of invertebrates. It also has its culinary uses. Look them up. And if you buy some Cornish yarg cheese, it's wrapped in nettles. Thymus vulgaris, or common thyme. Lots of uses for this and attracted to pollinators. Butterflies love it. Lots more plants can be used and it really is worth looking into a herb garden. It looks great for us and nature loves them too. I talk a lot about pollinators and insects being attracted to the herb garden, but remember, these are food for creatures like birds. Attracting insects into the garden helps our plants by pollination and provides a food source for the larger creatures.
Well, I hope you can hear those bees buzzing. I'm in a herb garden and I'm just stood next to some borage and they are really enjoying these flowers. In fact, this borage has been flowering for about 3 weeks or so now, and every time I've been in here, it's just been covered in bees, whatever the weather. At the moment, the favourite plant in the herb garden for the bees, they're everywhere. But as the garden grows, there'll be more flowers for them to collect their nectar. And this is a south-facing garden, so this is perfect for pollinators. They love a bit of sun. And I'm going to make a little bit of a home for them here as well. So with the bees, we're going to have some solitary bees in that. So I'm going to put a little bug hotel or bee hotel up the top end of the garden in the sun for them to make their nest and bring their young up. And I'm also, just before I do that, I'm going to put some piles of logs in the garden here. This south-facing garden is just outside a woodland, so the logs don't look out of place at all. And it'll look quite decorative around the plants and be something for the insects to go into. And because the logs are in full sun, insects like butterflies and that will bask on these logs to enjoy the sun and heat up so that they can fly around through the day. Back to the bee hotel. I've got a post in the ground. There we go, just put it in a bit more. And it's about 3 feet above the ground. And then I've got some bamboo canes in a sort of box, and I've made it quite decorative, so it looks like a little bird box with a little roof on top. And these bamboo canes are laid flat in there with one side facing out with the hole, and at the back end there's a piece of wood going down so that you don't have a hole all the way through, just a hole facing out. You can also, when you're doing this, put them slightly up at the back, only slightly, and that stops them filling with water. So that's been done. I've also got some pieces of wood with some drill holes in, and you want drill bits between 2 millimetre and 10 millimetre, so just any drill bit between those sizes, just drilled into the wood, and you want it to go in about 15 centimetres. That's probably deep enough for them to go into, maybe a little bit more than that. but 15 at a minimum. Do those things, get your post ready, put your box on top of the post, and then I'm going to put the recording device down and I'm going to screw the bee hotel onto the post. Job done.
When doing my research for this podcast, I can't remember how many times log piles have come up. Over the years, shredders have become cheaper and cheaper to buy, and we love to remove the scruffy, rotting wood from our gardens. Logs that are left to break down over time are a source of food for many creatures, as well as a place to live. As I research, I find that there is so much we're still learning about breaking down wood naturally and its benefits to nature. There's still so much we have to learn. A bug or bee hotel in the garden is very nice to look at, and I've seen them done in so many different ways. But if you want plenty of guests in your hotel, read up on how to make them properly. They're all very simple to do, but just that little bit of extra thought to get the best out of your hotel is needed. The RHS, Wildlife Trust, RSPB and Bug Life websites are all full of helpful advice. Thank you for listening to this, the penultimate episode of Gardening for Nature. I'll be back with the final episode in 2 weeks' time, so I hope you can join me. Please like and leave a comment on the media you're listening to if you can. It all helps spread the word. I look forward to seeing you next time when I will be talking about nature helping our mental health and a little recap on what we've learnt from the other episodes, which are all still out there to listen to, of course. See you soon.